And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, relationships, and life itself. We are your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
Thank you for all the comments and questions that we've received, quite a bunch, about the shows of the last weeks. One really stuck out. Julie from Louisville, Kentucky, wrote us about our show on horticultural therapy from December. When was that, Mark? December 19th?
Yes.
Somewhere there.
Yeah, 18th, 19th.
Yes. She writes, "Dear Helga and Mark, I really love your show and was especially touched hearing about the healing energy of working in the garden and being in nature in one of your shows. My career as a high-powered insurance broker ended abruptly when I was diagnosed with terminal cancer. The treatment was treacherous, and I was able to maintain my hope in conversation with my plants in my garden. I planted vegetables and herbs and flowers that have known anti-cancer properties, and today I'm in full remission in my fourth year, and I contribute my survival to the hours spent in my backyard. Thank you for your wonderful program, and keep up the great work. With appreciation, Julie from Louisville, Kentucky." Mm-hmm. Mark.
Very sweet. You know, for the listeners out there who didn't catch that show, it was a show about horticultural therapy with Patrice Hanlon. And she's the garden manager of the gardens at Heather Farm. And she has created a whole program where she works in the garden with students with Asperger's syndrome.
Which is similar to Alzheimer's, but its own separate diagnosis.
Yeah, a form of autism.
Autism, exactly, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful show, and wow, what a beautiful comment. The time spent in the backyard. I think it's a theme that keeps coming up throughout our show. The healing power, the nourishment beyond the food, beyond the nutrients in the food we eat.
Well, just being in the natural world, you have talked about this since the beginning of the show, about just being in the natural world and how that connection can change your relationship to everything else in your life.
Yes.
There's a very calming effect of participating in having a relationship with the natural world.
Getting your hands dirty. Yes. Julie from Louisville, Kentucky, thank you so much for that comment. If you would like to share anything with us or have questions, please send us your comments to share@anorganicconversation.com. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are very excited about our guest today, a woman who made local and organic ingredients her staple and initiated the farm to fork movement and created a restaurant that offered high-level vegetarian fare only. Really? Yes. Long before most of us knew what this meant. More on that when we come back right after the break.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like you, but I gotta think twice before I give my heart away. And I know all the games you play because I play them too.
Yes, faith. George Michael. We're back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about local, organic, high-end vegetarian cuisine and the farm-to-fork restaurant movement. With us in the studios, Annie Somerville. Nobody less than Annie Somerville, the author, teacher, leader in this movement, and executive chef of Green's Restaurant in San Francisco. Annie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's such a pleasure. I've frequented Green's Restaurant many dozen times over the last 14 years since I came to the Bay Area, and it was really my first exposure to a fairly simple kind of cuisine that really brings out the true flavor of what you are serving, but yet refined and combined as a meal in a way where you don't miss anything, right? Vegetarianism often seen as, well, something then obviously is missing a meat source or so, but you're completely, deeply satisfied and nourished. And we can talk about Green's Restaurant, the location that contributes and the ambiance to that too. But so I just want to start with thanking you for that.
Thank you. I wish I could describe it that way. It's very articulate. You can be my spokesperson any day. You
great.
Are.
Yes.
And hey, Annie, it seems that you were helping to pioneer here in the Bay Area the farm-to-table movement, the farm-to-restaurant movement, long before its popularity took hold, is where that's the conversation right now. And not just in the Bay Area, but all over the country, the buying local food, the relationship with your farmers is the topic of a conversation wherever I travel in the country. And, you know, what started that for you, or why was that important for you when you got started 30 years ago?
Well, let's say that's a complicated question, and I'll try to answer as simply as I can. You know, so many people were the real pioneers there, and I have found myself kind of coming in to it, and like so many people at that time, we knew what we believed in, we knew what we wanted to do, we didn't necessarily know what we were doing, and it didn't necessarily have a name, like as it does now, fork to table, farm to table. But it was what Greens was doing at the time. And I came to Greens 2 years after it opened. Greens opened in 1979 in Fort Mason and still there today. And I came in 1981. I worked under Deborah Madison, our illustrious founding chef. And at that time, people like Sabella Kraus, who was very, very connected, who really is the founder of the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market, really was working with chefs in the early 80s, getting chefs connected to all of our amazing small growers in the Bay region who weren't necessarily connected to the marketplace in restaurants. Mm-hmm. So, of course, Alice Waters, many, many, many others. But those are the people I feel like who are really just laying the ground, digging the soil, doing the double digging.
But what was the motivator for you? The flavor, or you got the concept of local living ecology and economies? Like what mm-hmm. was the main driver for you?
Well, I think the main driver for me was an invitation from the San Francisco Zen Center to come cook at Greens. And I had, how
so
does that sound?
Don't say they made you.
I won't say that I was enlisted. I will not say I was drafted either.
I had to cook good food.
However, I was invited to do so. And this was after living at Tassajara Zen Center's monastery, living and practicing as Zen Buddhist there for 3 years. And seemed to be that my calling was the kitchen, not the study hall and not the accounting office, and not necessarily taking care of guests in that way, many of the sort of appropriate duties of Zen monks. But mine was in the kitchen. And so I was, after returning from Tassajara, I was living there at 300 Page Street Zen Center, City Center, and invited to come to Greens. And I did. So that's how I got started. And I didn't really, at the time, it was a wild place. It was, you know, just 2 years after Greens had opened and super busy and something else, you know, just quite an amazing, energetic place with all sort of Zen Buddhism, food, environmentalism, all of those things kind of getting going, you know, in the early stages.
And you're making a really good point that our role, I know the theme of being of service,
yes,
not just in Buddhism, but especially in Buddhism, is really important, and it's important to you. And you are just highlighting that can come in a myriad of ways.
Yes, and I really do feel that to be of service is, I mean, that is one of the Buddhist teachings. And also, it's just one of the teachings of life, and it is certainly one of the great properties of the hospitality industry. It's a very simple concept, which is just greet your guests, make them feel welcome.
And aren't we all in life in the hospitality business? In
I
one
hope
way
so.
Or another?
I'd
Isn't
like to think so.
Isn't that what life is all about?
Well, I hope so. You know, I walk a lot and I see people's faces. And, you know, mostly people are very inward. They're not looking around, as you would say, at the natural world, which is a beautiful place. we are in an extraordinary place here. There's so much to see. And I just feel like it's also so entertaining to walk outside my door and to just look at what people are doing on the street. But mostly, unfortunately, people are they're plugged into their headsets. They're looking at their little screens. They're checking their emails. They're texting. They're walking in intersections without paying any attention to what's going on around them. So that's the natural. That's what many people are doing. That's not my world. My world is really the natural world.
And life is full of intersections. And actually, if you stop for a moment and look at nature, it's actually fascinating how nature is not looking at you. It just does its thing, right? I just read this comment of aerodynamically, a bumblebee is not supposed to fly, but the bumblebee doesn't know that.
and the bumblebee is certainly in service with the pollination and everything that it does. You know, this brings up an interesting point to digress a little bit, but I saw a movie called The Peaceful Warrior. And in that movie, there's an old guy working at a gas station. And this young kid keeps coming back in there and having all these questions about life and all this kind of stuff. And gets mad at the old guy and says, one time he says, you know, if you're so smart, why are you working at a gas station? And, you know, he just, Nick Nolte turns around and says, I'm not working at a gas station. I'm working at a service station. And to serve is the greatest calling any of us could have. And then just walks out there and starts taking care of the car and just that part right there.
And you feel like, that oomph in your stomach.
To serve, you know.
Yes.
Yes.
But you had a love for cooking before that even, right? And what was your childhood? How can one become a great chef?
Where
did you find pleasure in using ingredients and making meals that was
growing up? I grew up in a pretty traditional household, and my mother did cook. My mom cooked, and we did sit down to dinner every night. And we, no matter what we had, we always had candles on the table, and it was, you know, even if it was a simple meal. So that was established for me. And when I was in high school,
making space for the food and
would cook together. You know, simple things, and not complicated. And then in college, I was interested. I think in high school, I was interested in becoming a vegetarian, and then did so in college and lived with a group of people who were practicing Zen. Did that, and then of course, being part of the Zen Center community, let's just say that food was one of our things. Zen Center used to be, people would say that it was a food cult. So there's a love of food there, and so we did a lot of cooking together, and certainly cooking at Tassajara and cooking at the city center. I have not lived at Green Gulch, but I have taught classes there. So, you know, it just sort of, that's where it came from.
And we want to talk about Green Gulch for a moment. This is a perfect segue for that, because your ingredients are all coming mainly from one specific farm that is connected to your restaurant. So it's not just that you were the first high-end cuisine vegetarian restaurant in the nation, but also you, from the get-go, had a direct connection to your own farm. We're talking Annie Somerville, the executive chef at Green's Restaurant in San Francisco. Here on And Again, a Conversation, I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And Green's Restaurant, for people who are not familiar with it or listen to the show throughout the U.S. or Canada, greensrestaurant.com, really the first high-end culinary experience, the first high-end restaurant offering only local organic and vegetarian fare now for 32 years.
Coming up on 32.
Which is pretty, that already might be its own little record. So you're just setting the tone on so many levels. But let's talk about that. From the get-go, when Green's opened in 79, there was this connection because it's a San Francisco Zen Center project, right?
Yes.
An offering or business through the San Francisco Zen Center, Green's Restaurant, but also Green Gulch, the farm just across the Golden Gate Bridge in Marin County, organic really since its beginning. What's your relationship with that? You get most or all of your vegetables from that farm? Can it provide it year-round?
Let's see. We get as much as we can from Green Gulch. And Green Gulch is mostly producing in the spring, and then into kind of the mid-fall. And then when it starts to get cold out there and rainy out at the gulch, they usually take time for intensive meditations. Certainly the people who are in charge of the farm are working away. As we know, farmers don't ever really get a chance to rest. But so that's their growing season. And then mainly the crops that we get from them are beautiful lettuces, herbs. They're cool and coastal. So lots of chard, kale, kind of the winter squash.
Vegetables.
We get some little hot weather, you know, a few little from their kitchen gardens, some beans and things, but mostly, and then beautiful radicchios. Anyway.
So do you work with them on what you need, or do you take whatever they produce and let you know early enough and you create the menus?
We do both with them. And really, I've worked with, I think, all the farmers now. I mean, Green Gulch existed before Greens.
Yes.
But I have worked with all the farmers since I've been at Greens. And, you know, there's a rhythm to what they do, and they know what they do well. And they've learned over the years to kind of stick with that, to not try to, there's no point in trying to grow those hot weather crops in a cool coastal environment. So, yes. And then they also keep us informed when, you know, we agreed to order X number of cases of lettuce a week, but somehow we've fallen off. Now, what's going on? So so they're, you know, both growing for us, but they are also growing for the Ferry Plaza Farmers Markets, a few other chefs. And I believe they're also I think they also sell to the Mill Valley Market.
And a shout out at this place of point, of course, to Wendy Johnson and Sarah Tashker, the people who Wendy Johnson first and foremost, was the farm manager at Green Gulch for many, many, many years. And
a dear friend.
Yes, dear
yep.
friend
yep.
to all of us. And I'm sure you work with her intensively.
I have Wendy and I teach classes together. It's a lot of fun.
Yes, I can imagine.
It's very informative.
Double trouble.
I always feel like people, you know, it's just a morning with Wendy is something else.
Yes.
But may I also say yes. that really the cooking of greens comes, I mean, we're going back now, way back, but it's still very vivid for me. It really comes from serving guests at Tassajara for the summer guest season, because Tassajara is closed 6 months of the year. It's in the coastal range of California in a very remote location, hard to get to, actually. And so 6 months of the year, it's closed for meditation retreats, intensives. And then the other 6 months of the year, it's open to the public. And it's Tassajara's an old hot springs resort. And before that, it was an Indian camping place for the Esalen Indians to come to the hot springs. So anyway, Tassajara has been inhabited for millennia. And
so when you started with Tassajara, you, for 6 months of the year, you would invite anyone, right? The general public mm-hmm. had access to it.
Yes.
And they would be introduced to your kind of cooking.
Yes. And also Tassajara is a mandate as well. Tassajara is surrounded by the National Forest, and so it must be open to the public, which is great because it really does support the Zen Center. So anyway, preparing meals for the guests in the summer guest season, very successful. Then that led and baking, of course, but really starting with baking bread, because that was the Tassajara bread book, which kind yes. of really got things rolling. And then serving guests. Oh, excuse
and,
me.
And we do no, we, and we do want to talk about really the art of cooking, what you do in the kitchen,
yes.
and all your tips and tricks, and if we can
get it all
put
in
that in 1 hour. But right when we come back after the break, you're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And our guest today, Annie Somerville, chef extraordinaire from Greens Restaurant, greensrestaurant.com. Talking about vegetarian high-end fare. When we come back, right after the break.
Cornbread said, now that's all right. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to Cornbread.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And welcome. We're back here to an organic conversation, a show about food, relationships, stories from the land, ecology, vegetarian food, and life itself. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy. And Helge, I have a question for you. Why?
Yes.
At the beginning of the break, we were listening to that song, Beans and Cornbread. And I happened to glance over at this jar of beautiful heirloom seeds we have sitting in front of us today. And I was wondering, did you grow up with cornbread in Germany?
Yeah, I just heard that too. And I was like, wow, the lyrics were green and cornbread had a fight.
Yeah, beans and cornbread had a fight.
As they often do. No, there's no cornbread in Germany. That's an American invention, I would say. I mean, I can't speak for other countries on this planet, but no, there's no, you know, corn as a staple as you get it here, like on the grill or with meals.
Corn on the cob.
On the cob, like all that. No, that doesn't exist. Now it's so Americanized. I'm sure you can, of course, obviously you can buy corn in the grocery store, but no, cornbread, I never heard of it before.
And I asked because I was sitting here thinking that we have all these foods that we eat, and there's an assumption, I think, by many of us that people know what those things are because we grew up with them. And when you were talking about the goose fat and just different things a few weeks ago in one of the shows, that was all new to me, and yet it was so familiar to you. You know, you just kind of think, oh, everybody knows about this.
And, yes.
And so it just got me thinking, especially when we were talking about vegetarian cuisine, and there's people who...
It's fascinating how much actually the food culture that we grew up in defines who we are, and also our kind of our perception of the world, right? Mm-hmm. Like corn for me is... you know, usually grown on hundreds of thousands of acres, which we don't even have that kind of agricultural system in Europe, but definitely not in Germany. And there's some feed corn or maybe even some sugar corn grown somewhere, but no, corn, we have yummy, you know, hearty grain breads. And of course, Germany's known for its baking. As our guest Annie was just saying, baking at Tassajara, baking is a big deal in Germany, but we would never bake cornbread. Sorry, no offense, but it's just not what we do.
And Annie, how about you? I mean, you live in this world of food. Is there ever any of those? Like, I just made an assumption that maybe Helga would have had that.
Peace and cornbread.
And is there ever any of that type of assumptions around food, or is it just always a creative process of which you come to, you know, bringing this cuisine to people?
I have learned to not have any assumptions.
Oh, very smart.
If I thought I had one, it's best to not follow that.
Yeah, live a happy life then.
And then I'll also say that I'm a collaborator. I love to collaborate with other people, mm-hmm. with others. So in terms of the menu process, thinking about food, what I do best at, I think, is getting other people involved in that creative process, and that helps spark those creative ideas for me.
Can you walk us through like a week of what your week looks like, and also that collaborative process?
You're no longer like really on the skillet, right? Or are you still? hands-on cooking.
I do my cooking at home. And when I'm cooking at home, and these are simple meals on the days that I'm not working at Greens, but I realize while I'm going through the process of just like, maybe I'm just sauteing some greens. Maybe I'm just making a beautiful quesadilla with some really great dried beans that I've gotten at the farmer's market and some really great corn tortillas, which are using heirloom varieties of corn ground to make those tortillas. I'm thinking about what we're doing at Greens. Mm-hmm. So that for me is kind of is the process. And so I start my week on Tuesdays. I get to the farmer's market at the Ferry Plaza, and I already have received an order from our kitchen manager. And then I've got my little routine. I go around. I pick up from the farmers, possibly beekeepers, that we place the order with. And then also I do ad lib. So if there's something I see that's really great, I either will get it right then or think about that and say, well, let's get that on the menu for the weekend, or let's get that on the menu for the next week. Like I'll see something like little broccoli shoots, which sure. I realize those are super fresh. And they're just, it's the time of year. Don't miss those.
Or
so
some
get that
special
on the menu.
Squash or something.
Squash, it could be anything. It can be just like vivid spring onions. It can be green garlic. It can be citrus, because right now, of course, it's peak of citrus season. So anyway,
Does your staff in the kitchen love you for that? The chefs you work with there, the cooks?
I don't know that. I never ask them if they love me. I don't know that.
I mean, they could be, excited about the surprise if they're well groomed for that, or say, well, another thing to deal with.
No, I think people are excited by it. I think that, I mean, that's the whole deal with us.
You can taste that too.
Yes. And people always, a couple questions people ask me, aren't you tired of doing this after all these years? And I say, no. In fact, I was just asked that last night by a culinary intern from City College. And she said, aren't you tired of this? And I said, I'm not tired of it. You know, I can't think of anything I'd rather do. And it's exciting and it's fun. And also I get to work with a lot of really great, interesting, vigorous people who are a little bit younger than I am.
But what's exciting about it for you? The seasons don't really change. There are, seasons change throughout the year, but then next year, after 30 years of doing it, you kind of have a grip on what's grown.
I do, but it's also, I feel more like it's kind of like I'm a backpacker. So for me, you know, a week in the mountains is a big difference in the season for the plants and the animals, you know, because in the High Sierra, you know, there's just summer is a very, very short season. So I realize it's actually the seasons always, you know, are always like the days are either always getting longer or a little bit shorter. And therefore, there's just it is a transition. I mean, we can at some point we can say, OK, now it is spring and there's asparagus and there are peas and pea tendrils and all of that. But, you know, on the way to spring, other things happen. So that's more the way I think about food and the way I think about our menus and just the way I think about ingredients. And also a big part of it for me, too, is I really so enjoy my relationships with the farmers. They're just great people, total individuals, very independent. Everyone's different. It's a lot of fun. And that's a big reward in this work is to get to know people.
You have a great appreciation for life.
And, you know, Helga, that statement that you made is coming from a produce background, and Annie, you've been working with produce for years, and is even though people often say in the Bay Area, we don't have seasons, whenever I go to the East Coast, they say, well, you don't have seasons. And I say, well, that isn't so. We do have seasons, and even though they may not be as extreme as the seasonal changes that you see, there are definite seasons, and I can tell it in the food. And the Boss pear, the Meyer lemon, the broccoli, the rapini, all these different things can have a different flavor or a different texture, even though you may have seen them year after year after year after year. You know they're coming, and sometimes they don't, but you expect them. All these little nuances of those flavors that change that are the difference of how something's going to taste or how you're going to use it in a menu. And so, as produce people, we look for that. Okay, we know what to expect out of this apple. But it doesn't always deliver the exact expectation, and that's the great thing of the bite.
So when you go through the farmer's market, Annie, do you try everything before you buy it,
or
do you?
I taste a lot of food.
Yeah,
and sometimes I'm just tasting because it's fun, and you know, because I'll think, wow, you know, those Caracara oranges are really great, or boy, the blood oranges have gotten better, or wow, it's definitely I've got to get those page mandarins on the menu. So it's just that, and for me, our menu, the Greens menu, is an expression of that. And hopefully a coherent expression. And also I want the food to be fun. You know, I feel like I want it to be a great, I want it to be fun for people to come to Greens. You know, you come, you have a great meal, you're in a beautiful place. Hopefully you can see the Golden Gate Bridge. Like yesterday at lunch, there was no bridge. And then suddenly, you know, we were having like a giant fog event. And then slowly, you know, the whole bay just appeared. To me, that's a pretty magical thing.
Annie Somerville, executive chef at Greens Restaurant, right on the waterfront at the Presidio in San Francisco, a leading institution for high quality, high level vegetarian, local and organic cuisine. And yes, your menu absolutely represents that kind of dancing around the peak of whatever is in season at that moment. And you were saying during the break, you change your menu, what, every 3-4 weeks? It's constantly, in a way,
it's kind changing. Of always moving. And yes. And sometimes we stay a little bit in one place just because we really like some of the dishes we're doing. And I just feel like
holding
people
on to
are,
it.
Well, it's delicious. And sometimes it's hard to let go of certain dishes because they're good.
Oh, yeah.
However,
sometimes
change
it's
is
hard
good.
To let go.
Change is
and
good.
Change is good. Yes. So let's get into the cooking. Before we really talk about your secrets on the preparing, why vegetarianism in for that restaurant? Because of the Zen tradition?
Yes. So I'll just say that in the Zen Center kitchens, the three practice place kitchens, only vegetarian dishes are prepared. I'm not saying that everyone who's practicing Zen Buddhism is a vegetarian. But so that was, anyway, that was the natural thing for Greens because of just that position as a restaurant owned by Zen Buddhists that we would be vegetarian. And really that cooking, kind of the basis of it really started with Tassajara. You know, kind of that was the beginning, or that was maybe the seed, the
and,
place
and
from
the
which
principle
it germinated.
Is not taking life or respecting animals?
Yes,
or
yes, all yes. Of it. Yes. However, that can be complicated. So, you know, there are complicated things, you know, because, yes. For instance, some of our, we love dairy products. So, you know, the majority of cheeses from the U.S., for whatever reason, are made with a vegetarian enzyme, you know, an enzyme, mm-hmm. vegetable enzyme. So they are considered vegetarian. But many of those delicious cheeses imported from Europe, yes. Some of which we love as well, are made with animal rennet. So,
yes. And
you know, that's
animal
a
rennet is basically the inner lining of the
yes.
of a stomach
yes.
To make the cheese coagulate.
So is Greens vegetarian enough for everyone? I'm not absolutely certain. But I think we satisfy the majority of people who come.
And as long as there's transparency around the ingredients that you're using and the intention around it, then
yes.
People know what to expect.
Yes. And also I try to be as, you know, I really try to just work with people. You know, if people want, they can have this, but they can't have that, then we try to, I spend a lot of time responding to people's dietary requests.
How has that changed? Actually, that's a really, really good question. Over the last 30 years, how has how have the patrons, how have the guests changed in your view of, you know, how they were 30 years ago in terms of anticipating a certain cuisine, being surprised by it? Now, as Mark said earlier, it's, I don't want to say it's common, but really every good restaurant has discovered and really put on the menu their connection to local farms and that the local farm movement, at least here in the wider Bay Area and throughout the state perhaps, is so beautiful and so celebrated now.
Yeah.
What you have pathed the way for.
If I can also say, you know, so many just traditional cuisines, vegetables are a big part
yes.
of those cuisines. And I think that our local chefs are celebrating them and they're having a lot of fun with them. So, and so, that's one of the things I experience at the farmer's market is just talking to other people about, hey, what are you doing with that?
So have your guests that come to Greens changed? Like the reasons why they're coming, maybe more Zen inclined 30 years ago? I don't know.
Well, 30 years ago was a long time ago.
Where was I?
One year ago was a long time ago in this world. So yesterday was quite a long time ago. So I think that, you know, if anything, I mean, travel is such a big industry. And so people, and, you know, we have a pretty amazing people either both living in the Bay Area and coming to the Bay Area, coming to San Francisco, coming to this beautiful region. And so I think that, you know, people are very sophisticated and have been exposed to all kinds of delicious food mm-hmm. all
and
over
cultures.
The world.
Sure.
So I think that people expect to be challenged. They want to see some excitement. They want to have some fun interesting times with their food. And I also think that we do, and I also think one of the things that we've done is we've become much more open to the realization that there are many people who have what we call special dietary needs.
Sure.
And for whatever reason, one of the specialties right now is allergies to gluten. That's a biggie.
Huh.
And I think that's maybe because we say wheat.
C'est moi.
Is. And why is
yes,
that? What is that? It's a mystery.
Yes.
And so,
I mean, I grew up on bread and now I can't have it
yeah.
at all.
So that's a biggie.
Yes.
And so, but we've realized, hey, there are a lot of really great things that don't have, you know, quinoa is delicious.
Mm-hmm.
There are all kinds of ways, maybe not cornbread, but polenta.
Let's talk about
great.
That.
So you're
listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And now revealing her secrets is Annie Somerville, the executive chef from Green's Restaurant in San Francisco, California, and also an author, teacher, and leader in the local organic food movement. Annie, if somebody wanted to get into vegetarian and really try that, is there like one golden rule where you say, if you work with vegetables, never do this or, you know, always do that? What's the general take on your cooking that's important?
Such a rule breaker. I can't even follow my own recipes.
That's important.
I refuse to follow my own recipes.
Oh, good.
So let's just say this. I always say start out gradually. You know, if you're interested in becoming a vegetarian, but you're feeling uncertain about it, you know, become a flexitarian first. I think it's make that transition. You know, much of the world eats with lots of vegetables and a tiny bit of animal protein. That's the way poor people eat. And also much of the world. So I say start that way. Just cut down on that chicken, fish, meat, and then just keep trimming. Find some recipes you really like. Talk to friends who love to cook. You know, however it is that you can get access to some great recipes, or, you know, if you've, you know, maybe you've come to Greens, maybe you've gone to another restaurant, there's something that you really like, you know, figure out how to make that dish or see if you can dig up that recipe. And then don't expect too much of yourself. Just kind of take it easy. And because I feel like that's the best way to make a transition and stay with it.
Well, I know in Deborah Madison's book, Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone.
Yes.
It was a book I bought several, I think it's like 10 years old now. Maybe longer.
Maybe longer.
that it was very simple to read. It was real easy to access. The recipes were not so elaborate that you felt like, oh, I can't do that. I want to do it, but it's too much work. There's a lot of options. And just like you're saying, that just, you know, take a flexitarian. I love that, you know. Why do we have to have labels on everything is what I often wonder. It actually could be a whole show on labeling. But, I mean, that I'm a vegetarian, I'm a flexitarian, I'm a carnivore, I'm all these things. And the reality is I believe that you can celebrate all this and honor what you need to do for yourself and for the planet and for life around you. And that is individual. I really believe that it's individual, and I think bringing people to a vegetarian cuisine is only going to help them with their, you know, on their health-wise, just from all the studies that we're seeing now.
Well, it's true. And I think this every time I'm not a proselytizer about vegetarianism, but I am a proselytizer of eating good food and living a healthy life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, and it's not rigid. It's just, it, to me, it's a natural thing to eat fresh food, to buy food from people that I know. And it's fun too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that that's part of it. Cooking for me starts at the farmer's market when I can get really excited about. People say to me, how could you get so excited about kale? Well, I can get excited about kale. You know,
yeah,
to me, it's
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
I can just get very excited about like three or four varieties of kale. And a beautiful head of rainbow chard, because I realized those stems are going to be so good when I saute those up with some spring onions and green garlic. So for me, it's a natural thing to just eat good food that's real food. And I do feel strongly, as I think all three of us in this room feel, that, you know, if America just did a lot more of that, we'd be in better shape, and
mm-hmm.
we'd be in a better place as a country and with the ability to lead for the future, because it's not looking too good right now.
Yes, and we just had a fantastic show on What's in Season with Earl Herrick from Earl's Organic Produce, one of the Bay Area and national produce distributors that is focused entirely on organic food. And we talked about kale for half an hour. So that was
exciting. Kale was great.
Very exciting show. Annie, we'll take a quick break. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I am Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
Again, with us in the studio, Annie Somerville, author, teacher, sustainable food movement leader, and executive chef of Green's Restaurant. We'll be right back after the break.
A bottle of whites. Bottle of red, perhaps a bottle of rosé instead. Get a table near the street in our old familiar place. You and I, face to face. Mm-hmm. A bottle of red, a bottle of whites.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick. I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today we're talking about vegetarianism and high-end vegetarian cuisine. Our guest in the studio with us, Annie Somerville, the executive chef of Green's Restaurant, greensrestaurant.com in San Francisco. A beautiful restaurant right on the waterfront with the bridge of the Golden Gate, a view of the Golden Gate Bridge, really a leader in the world of high-end vegetarian restaurants for 32 years. Annie, we were just getting into recipes and tips and tricks from your kitchen. We're in February now, so it's the time of greens, bitter greens, maybe squashes, some root vegetables. Let's go through that with the time we have left. If somebody wanted to try things that are maybe a little bit intimidating on the shelf, what's your... Let's start with greens. What do you do right now? What's in season and what?
Well,
how would you prepare them? And what's like the one thing not to do?
Okay. Let's start with chard and kale because those are two biggies on my list. First, I'll say with chard has usually a nice big stem running up the leafy green. And what I do is I either with my paring knife, I just trim away the stem up into the leaves, or I just kind of pull the leaves away, just depending on whether you like to use a paring knife or do it by hand. And then I slice up the stems, and then I either just leave those leaves whole or I kind of chop them up a little bit. And then I Chard does not need to be parboiled, so that can just be simply sautéed. And I think the number one thing you were mentioning is oftentimes people...
What's the difference between the two, parboiled and...
Oh, I'm sorry. Parboiling would be to just drop it into boiling water or to steam it, to get it cooked ahead of time before you sauté it. Kale tends to be, even when it's really young, can be a little bit tough. And I think it just responds better when it is parboiled or steamed before sautéing. That's not 100% of the time, but I'd say about 90% of the time, unless you're just getting very, very, very young kale from your yard or from your local farmer.
And we're talking seconds, right? We're talking a few moments.
Yes. It's not, well, it depends. Again, and maybe we can get to that with a kale, but I'll just say for chard, what I like to do is I slice up the stems. I like to slice things on the diagonal just because they're pretty and they're long. I feel like you don't need to peel away the stem. Sometimes people like to remove the strings. I don't find that to be necessary. And then I just like to saute them with a little bit of olive oil, some garlic. Like at this time of year, we're actually getting some fresh stalks of green garlic, but you can use good old regular garlic, maybe some onion, some spring onion or some leek, something that just gives it a little body. Mm-hmm. And then get a little salt in the pan as well. Use a good olive oil. It doesn't have to be fancy. Get your stems going. Add, if they start to stick to the pan, just have a little water. That you can just, or I mean, you can, if you have vegetable stock as well, but water is it's a great way to just keep your pan moist. I get the stems going along with the onions, the garlic, a little salt, a little pepper.
A couple minutes?
That's a couple minutes, 2 minutes maybe three. And then I add the chard leaves. And again, a little bit more oil, a little bit of salt, a little pepper. At that point, you can, toss that all around, either with a pair of tongs or whatever it is you like to cook, utensil you like to use.
Sure.
And then when the stems begins to wilt together a little bit, then you can add some pepper flakes if you like, or some toasted almonds or walnuts or pine nuts or pumpkin seeds, whatever it is you like to add. And then just maybe cook it. Maybe all together, the greens are going to cook about 2 minutes, so maybe it's about a 5-minute process, and then just serve that right away. Or the other thing you can do is just get it to the point where it's almost done, take it off the heat. You've got a few more things to do in the kitchen before you're ready to sit down to your meal, and then just finish it at the last minute.
So last night, speaking of this, I had like 12 bunches of chard.
12 bunches?
And
that's
so
a lot of chard.
So I steamed the tops. The leafy part, because mm-hmm. I was going to save that to use during the week. And I took all those stems, and then I chopped them up really small, put them in a pan with mushrooms and onions and garlic and a couple of other things that I had around the house. And the mushrooms will also sweat. They'll release moisture.
Yes.
And so between all that, I could put it on low, put a top on it, and just kind of that would provide moisture. And so what you're describing, I did that with some rice last night, and that was dinner.
That's delicious, and that's great. And the thing is, too, which reminds me, and you mentioned that also, Helga, which was just, I think that two things that happen with people with greens. First of all, people feel intimidated. They know that greens are really good for them. I always say good and good for you, because they are delicious when prepared well, mm-hmm. simply, and combined with other vegetables, oftentimes a grain. But a lot of it is not overcooking and getting enough seasoning in there.
How do you not overcook? Because when you mentioned, when you spoke about that recipe, the moment you said they kind of...
Begin to wilt?
Yeah, wilt together. Mm-hmm. Like, do you use pretty low heat? And what's the time when you know, well, I have 10 seconds left, because at that point, all of a sudden, it becomes mush. And what I find at greens, you always are... You keep that original shape, like it's perfectly
fresh.
Done, and
yes.
it just still looks like what it was. When I do it, it's one big blob of green, and it's yummy, but it's beyond it. It's hard to, it's always less time than I think.
Well, maybe that's the thing to know. And part of it is I have been doing this for so long that I can look at something, and I can walk by in the kitchen and see somebody cooking something, and I already know you're going too far. Or you need to take that needs to cook longer. That's not cooked enough.
Yeah.
I can tell. Just look at it. I know that. So I think, the thing too is just taste it.
That
and
makes
you'll
you
know.
The chef and me the radio show host.
Well, and I would just like to chime in is when I was first starting to cook with more greens and these seasonal vegetables, you are going to make mistakes. It's okay. You are going to cook it too long. It's going to be like your green blob that you've had. But what I did in those cases, I just grabbed a can of soup out of the cupboard or something, added them to something that I knew that
changed the dish.
Well, because
Because I did cook them too long.
Wait,
okay,
wait.
So they're too soft for that the texture that I originally wanted. So I just made a lemon is to lemonade type thing.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I'm going to add them to some soup, and I'll eat them this way. Next time I know I can't be doing five things in the kitchen when I'm sautéing these up. I need to pay attention to this a little bit more if I'm learning this process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my dog likes it really tender.
Well, there you go, yeah. Yeah. So he bugs you until you leave it on the... Yeah.
That's right.
Well, the other thing I want to say about the leafy greens, too, is a lot of times it's nice to add like a little bit of lemon or maybe a splash of sherry vinegar, a nice vinegar to them, just gives it a little acidity. Just do that at the very end, because that acidity will discolor them. If you were to add that lemon or vinegar in the very beginning, the greens turn that kind of olive drab, kind of fatigue green color. So that's a nice thing to just do at the end. But lately I've just been finding I'm very happy to just have some spring onions and some garlic and a little salt and pepper and maybe some pepper flakes. I'm in heaven. Have that on top of polenta or on some kind of a grain or, you know, alongside something else.
And since they're delicious, even not 90% done, not 100% done, again, for me, the golden rule is don't overcook.
Right.
You know, they're still fine to eat, of course, but if in doubt, just force yourself to end it after a minute and a half, because they will basically be done, even if they could have had another 30 seconds. If you go over for a minute, all of a sudden, it really does change the structure and everything else.
It does. But, and I also feel like, you know, sometimes at home and sometimes things are overcooked. But, you know, it's also okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't have to be. It's not a perfect world. And,
oh, good.
You know, just enjoy it. And I do want to say, if I can say about kale, I like to combine chard and kale. And I just find, even though I just really just want to put that kale in the sauté pan first thing, then add, I find that if I just parboil it, I just drop it into boiling water with a little bit of salt first. It can also be steamed just to tenderize it a little bit. And if you've got pretty young kale, that could be a minute or 2 minutes. But if it's big and it's been around for a while and it's weathered a few storms this winter, it could take 4 minutes. But then it's you just remove it, give it a shake, drain off some of that water, and then just add that along with your chard when it goes into the pan. And
how about massaging leafy green vegetables? We had somebody
that happens at
on
the Zen
the show.
Center, doesn't it?
No, we had somebody on.
I believe it.
A nutritionist who said if you really break down the structure by massaging it, literally massaging it in a salad bowl, it becomes super tender.
I believe that. I haven't ever done that, but that'll be something new for me to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great. Mm-hmm. Sharing her deepest secrets is Annie Somerville, the executive chef of Green's Restaurant. This is an Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helber.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
Annie, let's move on from the green world to, what, squashes? Right
sure.
now, February, beautiful. Mark, you brought a little basket, in fact.
Yes, this and is I see a beautiful delicata squash
yeah,
sitting right
delicata.
Before me.
Mm-hmm. Rock hard. Many, many different varieties.
Roast.
Pretty much.
Roast your squash.
Yes. So how do you do it? Slice up in the middle in a little water pen in the oven? Or is
you
that,
know, what,
because that's the only recipe I know.
Well, I'll say with delicata, what I
well,
love.
That's a good start.
Okay.
I love delicata because I always say to people, you can eat the skin. Not
mm-hmm.
all, you can't eat the skin of all squashes, particularly not those gnarly kabocha.
Oh, you don't?
I don't.
Those?
I don't eat the skin. They're pretty tough. But I find the delicata's got a tender skin. And so what we do is just slice it, oftentimes on the diagonal. It can just be straight across, just right across. Scoop out, you know, pull out, scoop out the seeds and the membrane. And then
so you end up with little steaks almost, right?
You do.
Little
and
smiles.
And then
yes.
what we do is a lot of is, because it's so delicious and so easy too, is roast it. So have the oven on at 400 degrees. Just either just brush a little bit of olive oil. You can have a little chopped garlic in your oil if you like, and some salt and pepper on. Sprinkle that salt and pepper over the squash, which has been brushed with a little oil or tossed with a little oil, garlic. And then just roast that on a baking sheet at 400 degrees. Could even be 425 if you're running a little short on time. And then
for what,
that might
45
take,
minutes?
Oh, no.
No,
it's
no.
quick. And this is like, I think we
oh,
do
really?
Maybe like, we cut it maybe a half inch to 3/4 inch thick. That's maybe 20 minutes. And then it's ready. I mean, you can eat it right away that way, or it's then ready. You can pull it out of the oven, and later on you can pop it back in the oven and, you know.
Brown it a little, crisp
brown
it
up a little bit. And sometimes, a lot of times we have a grill going most of the time, so we often grill it too.
Sure.
So, but that's one of the things is
nice.
To just, in that case, you don't want to over roast it. And it's really delicious. It's
and
a great
not,
one.
You're not cooking this before in hot water for 10 minutes.
We're not. No, it's the beauty of roasting. And then other squashes that we love to use. I love kabocha. what's the other? There's a beautiful orange squash with a, I can't think of its name right now, with a big, thick skin.
Well, there's, is it like a red curry?
Yes, red there curry it is, right squash. There. Yeah. Red curry, yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
So I love the kabocha and the red curry. Those have a very kind of denser, drier flesh than the butternut. And those are great for roasting. Those are great for soup. You know, just cut that big old gnarly squash in half.
Half-inch slices.
Well, that so I would
just
cut it.
You won't be able to do that.
No. And don't cut off your hand while you're doing it either. Yeah. Have a nice sharp knife and kind of be careful there.
Because we are talking about vegetarian cuisine, but how do you do that? How can you not cut off your hand? I mean, some of these squashes are so firm or hard.
Produce man's tip.
Yeah.
Is if you go to a produce department, you can ask them. They usually have a big French knife or a knife, a melon cutting knife that they can cut. They can get if you get the big red curry or kabocha or blue hubbard or any of those big squashes, if they can get it initially cut in half, that gives you something to work from. And as Annie probably knows, is often if you can get just a slice off part of the squash to get rid of the round edge and then have it sit flat on the counter,
it gets easier.
That gives you something to play with there. And so you want to create a safe situation for yourself. And
no bloodshed.
And another thing, a tip that you would probably be mentioning too, is I've had chefs tell me they put the whole squash in the oven for 20 minutes.
3 days.
Well, 20 minutes, a half hour, and it softens it up just a little bit. They pull it out.
Yes.
And that's a good one. I haven't heard that one.
And then they let it cool, you know, enough to where you can handle it. Mm-hmm. Then the knife goes in a little easier. It's not completely cooked or anything. And then you could take it and put it back in the oven.
Do whatever you want to with it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the main thing is however you can get that squash cut in half, whatever means you, safe means that you can come by to do that, then just, again, roast it. Turn it upside down on a little oil. You can put a tiny bit of water on a baking sheet or in a baking dish, cover it with foil or whatever you like to cover with when you're baking and roasting, and then, roast that at 400 degrees. Get that really, really nice and soft. Then you can scoop it out, and then you can go straight to a soup.
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
you can make a puree, you know, or just a chunky, wonderful squash event.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think butternut is a great one, too, because it is very buttery. It's very easy to handle. It's easy to peel. And it's got a great texture, really silky. And again, it's great for soups. It's great for roasting. It's just a great all-around ingredient.
Do you have your books that you wrote, the cookbooks, on that people shouldn't follow, as you said?
You have to follow. That's what a cookbook's for. These are recipes that, and I always say that positive, the thing about a cookbook is you want people to feel successful all the way through.
Yes.
You don't want them to have that moment where they're thinking,
they
don't know what's wrong, but something is wrong and it must be my fault.
That's right. It's
but
me.
It's not your fault. It's the author of the cookbook's fault because they didn't follow they didn't follow what they needed to do.
Life is not your fault. But do you have those books on the Greens Restaurant site?
Yes, we do. We have Everyday Greens and Fields of Greens.
Fantastic. And this was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thank you again to our guest today, Annie Somerville. Pleasure to have you, Annie. Thank you. Who is an author, teacher, organic sustainable food movement leader, and of course the executive chef of Greens Restaurant. The website is greensrestaurant.com for beautiful photos of both Green Gulch Farm, where Greens Restaurant receives much of his produce from, all part of the San Francisco Zen Center, as well as a resource, that website, for Annie's cookbooks. Thanks again, Annie, for coming to the studio. Pleasure.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Gina Rastani.
For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com.
You can also follow us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. And we'd love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
Coming up right after the hour is Your Supernatural Life with Beth Greer. We are your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then, and thanks again for being part of An Organic Conversation.